So we started this, we'll call it Psalm Party, a few weeks ago. And what's a party without decorations, right? So we put a few up, and if you're wondering what happened to the tree, we learned something very valuable this week. Inflatable tree and hot sanctuary don't go together. So we came in this week, and the tree was, like, deflated on the stage, and I didn't feel like blowing it back up again. So it's in a closet somewhere. Maybe the tree will come back if it ever gets a little cooler, but remember, there are two kinds of psalms. Remember? There are those psalms that encourage you to relax and be still and know that I am God. Then there are those psalms that encourage you to celebrate, and we cry out, great is the Lord. So we hung this little sign up here that tells you which one we're doing this week. So when you picked up your communion, you can look and say, okay, do I have to be ready to celebrate, or can I just sit back and go, I got to tell you something. I walked that park 3 times yesterday. I'm ready for the word relax. Oh my gosh, it was a hot day, but 3 trips around at some point during that day. So I'm ready to relax, and so we're going to have kind of a moment of just don't overthink this. Just kind of sit in God's presence today. Just kind of let God feed you, and don't work too hard at this, because we're going to start with a very simple phrase. You've got to have faith. Most of us have heard that phrase before, haven't we? Maybe it was told to us. Maybe it was even said, we've even said it to someone else. And usually it's spoken with really, really good intentions. When somebody tells you got to have faith, what they're telling you is that you just need to hang in there. Trust God. Don't give up. Don't quit. The problem is that phrase is often used as a conversation stopper, isn't it? Somebody comes to you and they're struggling with life, and they've got things they need to share in their heart, and they're going, and you're like, just have faith. You're not trying to solve their problem. You're trying to get them to stop talking because they're dragging you down, and you have somewhere else you have to be. So we don't really use that phrase to be a faith builder. It can sound less like encouragement and more like this idea of dismissal. Yeah, take your problems. Go somewhere else. Just remember, you got to have faith. And while trust is essential to faith, one of the primary ways trust grows is not by ignoring questions. It's by answering them. And when it comes to our churches, and this church is no exception to this rule, over time, the church has sometimes created a culture where questions feel threatening. Maybe they feel threatening because sometimes we don't answer them because they feel like they're an attack on what we believe. What do you mean that's not what you believe? That's not what I believe, and so there has to be, so I can't answer your questions because I feel threatened by what you say. Sometimes we don't answer them because we've never thought about the questions ourselves. We've never took time to sit down and ponder some of the harder questions in Scripture. We've never taken time to try to come up with some applications. So I can't give you an answer because I've never taken time to think about it myself. And sometimes it's just plain and simple. I don't want to answer your question because I don't know the answer. I have absolutely, positively no idea how to answer it. You know how we usually answer that question? Go talk to, and then we fill in the blank of somebody else's name, hoping again, got to have faith. Go talk to somebody else. I don't have your answer. And so the result of that is that many people are walking around quietly and nervously about this idea of faith. What does it really mean to have faith? And then when they begin to think about this and everybody else keeps passing off, they feel guilty about having questions. Have you ever been to that point that you're going through something and you've got questions about who God is and what God is doing and how this is supposed to work, and it seems like your entire life is falling apart and there's nobody there to answer a question, and so you start feeling guilty because it seems like everybody else around you has got all the answers, right? Everybody else, it seems to be okay. And quietly what begins to happen is they begin to think that doubt is something means that something's wrong with you spiritually. I've got questions that I can't answer. And everybody else seems to be okay with this. And so obviously, where's the problem? Problem's with me. Something's wrong with my faith. And then I go and find that person and try to talk to them. And they say, well, you got to have faith. That didn't answer my question. See, I've been at this for a long time. And when you start out 17 years working with teenagers, you get a lot of the times that they'll come to you and they'll say, I think I'm losing my faith. You'll sit down and you'll have these questions with people that are going through crisis moments in their life, and they think they're losing their faith. And as I began to talk to these people, it's never because they've stopped caring. It's because they've got questions they just can't get answered. And so the best thing that you can tell somebody at that point is when they're struggling with questions, there's nothing wrong with your faith. You're actually growing in your faith. If you never have a question, if you never begin to look outside of what you already believe and what you already know, then you can't grow. So our doubts and our questions sometimes are necessary for our faith to grow. So if we're going to have this conversation about faith and doubt, I guess we need to understand what is faith, right? I mean, what does it mean to have faith? And unfortunately, a lot of us are like these little dudes right here on the screen that they think faith is like a light switch. I'm having a good day, yay! Having a bad day, aw! Having a good moment, yay! Having a bad moment, aw! And we flip our faith in and off, on and off, but based on how we're feeling, how we're looking at things. And when we do things like that, that's not understanding what faith is. You see, faith is actually more like a muscle. And it grows with this thing that we call exercise. So if you never exercise your faith, then your muscle, your faith muscle never grows. And questions are often how we begin to act on our faith. You see, the reality is all of us live somewhere between complete certainty. I've got it all figured out. I know all the answers. I got everything done. I'm 100% sure. And then there's the other side of my coin, complete doubt. And where does my complete doubt usually start? In the quiet moments of my life. When I'm all by myself and I'm really honest with the questions I'm asking, I begin to have my doubts. Like the father in Mark chapter 9, verse 24, we often find ourselves saying, I do believe. And then on the other side says, help my unbelief. See, Christianity at its core is an evidence-giving faith. It must be put into motion. The book of Acts is full of believers that are reasoning, explaining, answering questions, defending the truth of Christ's resurrection. And here's what you really need to hear. God is not threatened by your questions, as long as you have sincere questions. God is not a God that looks at you and says, why are you still having these questions? He took time to answer questions himself. And that's why, as we continue in our summertime in the Psalm series, our Psalm party, we're going to go to Psalm chapter 73. So if you want to grab a copy of the Bible out of the pew rack in front of you, and you want to turn to Psalm chapter 73, that is where we're going to be. We're not going to be doing a lot of bouncing around. And Psalm 73 does not begin with a question. It begins with a conclusion. How does he start Psalm 73? Verse 1 starts out, surely God is good to Israel. So that's his concluding statement. I know God is good to Israel. But then he immediately pulls the curtain back and he admits, but as for me, me, the individual, the person writing this psalm, as for me, my feet had almost slipped. I had nearly lost my foothold. You know why this is really an important psalm? Because this isn't just some random guy or a random girl that walked down the road and had this thought. This isn't just somebody that said, oh, I'm having a really bad day. That's not who he is. This is a guy named Asaph. You'll find that he wrote a lot of these psalms. He's a worship leader. Now, I don't mean a worship leader that just leads songs. He is somebody that was responsible for bringing worship into Israel and environment. He's a teacher. And most importantly, he is a spiritual leader. And here he is openly admitting there was a season in his faith when he almost collapsed. That's what that means. I nearly lost my foothold. So if you've ever been climbing or hiking and you're going up and all of a sudden you step in one of those spots that isn't quite firm and your foot goes sliding down and you feel yourself going back down from that one, that's what he's describing here. His faith, he began to stumble. And that's important for me. And it's important for you. Because having doubts is not a sign that you have weak faith. Even mature believers can struggle. Even a leader can wobble. This psalm is not written to celebrate the idea of doubt, but it is to testify how Asaph got his head on right. How those doubts were addressed. How I can relax even when it just feels like my life is in total turmoil. He shares his story so that others won't feel alone. You have someplace you can go and read when you're having those moments. He shares this story so that you'll know your confusion is survivable. Doubt and confusion is not fatal. It can be survived. He shares this story so they'll see that faith can come and the other side gets stronger. This sounds like maybe something that we need, especially in our modern world, where there seems to be a lot of questions that I don't know how to answer, and therefore I get a lot of doubt. And this is where I personally like Asaph, because Asaph and I think have a lot of the same personality, because Asaph doesn't dance around his issue. He doesn't hem and haw with God. He doesn't sit here and say, God, I got to talk about something. You know what his problem is? It's right there in Psalm 73, verse 3. It says, he envied the prosperity of the wicked. So Asaph was there, and he was looking out into the world, and he was looking at all the bad people in the world, and he was seeing how all the bad people seemed to be having a lot of fun, and how all the good people were not having any fun. And he looked at God, and he says, what's up with this, God? What's up with that? I mean, I'm doing the best I can to be a very good Christian and a very good follower, and these people out here are doing, and God, you're blessing them, but you're not blessing me. Have you been there before? I have. Look at the world, and you begin to ask that question. He openly admits there was a season in his faith that he had just collapsed again. And I really like him because as you read through the psalm, from verse 4 to 11, he sounds a lot like me because he just rants. I'm not going to read the rant to you. You can go read that home as a part of your homework. He just literally rants. You know what he's ranting to? God. He's looking at God and he's asking all these questions. He's really just throwing a temper tantrum because, God, you're blessing these people, but you're cursing me because I'm not having as good a life as they are. And yeah, I can be there. And then he defines what he says is wicked. He lands in verse 12, and this is what he says. This is what the wicked are like, always free of care, and they go about amassing wealth. Oh, wow. Now, I think maybe this guy had taken a visit somehow, time traveled, and went to modern-day America. Isn't this some of our conflicts that we're having today? People that, while others are working really hard just to get two ends of the rope to meet, you've got these other people that are just spending money like it's just water. And it just seems the more they spend, God is blessing them. And everything is getting bent out of shape because, God, isn't it supposed to be fair? Isn't it supposed to be equal? I mean, they seemed healthy, carefree, successful. Their lives looked kind of easy. Meanwhile, Asaph decides that what he's doing is kind of pointless. This is what it reads in verse 13 and 14. Remember, this is the worship leader. Surely in vain I have kept my heart pure and have washed my hands in innocence. All day long I have been afflicted. And even mourning brings new punishments. Come on. We can modernize the terms here. You can feel this, right? God, getting up and doing this over and over again, what's the point? I mean, what's the use in doing this? I mean, seriously, I could go out and play golf on Sunday mornings. Not this Sunday morning. It's kind of hot. And I can't really play golf, so I say that, but I've never played golf in my entire life. But I could go find something else to do with my Sunday morning because, look, this really doesn't matter because those people are okay and I'm not. I'm struggling. That's raw. That's uncomfortable. But I love it. It's honest. This psalmist is honest when he's talking with God. You see, what's important is that Asaph doesn't censor himself before God. He's throwing a temper tantrum. He's frustrated. He's irritated. But he doesn't soften his frustration. He pours it out. He pours it out like we read in Psalm chapter 62, verse 8. Pour out your heart before him. Not some of your heart. Not the polite parts. God wants to see all of it. Why? Because it's hard to heal what we refuse to expose. God can't work in the parts that I'm not willing to open up to. I'm one of these people that sometimes on Saturday morning I get up and that Saturday morning cartoons are a thing of the past. And I miss my Saturday morning cartoons. But sometimes I get up on Saturday morning and everybody else is still in the bed and I go downstairs and we have this channel called BBC. And when you turn it on Saturday mornings, they're doing these Animal Planet, World Planet, you know, My Planet, Look at the Planet kind of shows, that like the National Geographic stuff. And once they did a documentary on this on a sea cucumber. Cucumber works. When it is attacked, it expels all of its internal organs. Therefore, the predator eats what it wants and leaves. And then somehow the sea cucumber regrows what it has lost. But it survived. It's a strange image. But it fits where we are today. Because sometimes healing begins by getting everything into the open. Sometimes I used to have a manager who used to call it venting your spleen. All of the bad stuff that's in you has to come out into the open so that it can begin to heal. So it can begin to let God work. And before you think about it, God can handle your frustration. He can handle your confusion. And he can handle your he can absolutely handle your questions. But we must remember when we're having these moments and everything is coming out of us, and it just seems like I can't find a good word to say out of my mouth if my life depended upon it. We need to remember, don't turn doubt into broadcast. I'm down in verse 15. And what it says, if I had spoken out like that, I would have betrayed your children. Wow. So sometimes when I'm going through these moments, he's not saying it's wrong to ask the question. But what he is saying is that it would be wrong to teach his unresolved conclusions. If we've got things that we're struggling with, struggle with them. Ask the questions. Seek advice. Look for those that can help you. But you know what you don't do? Start teaching them. Start saying, this is how life must be. See, there's a huge difference between wrestling with doubt and then turning around and broadcasting this truth. Doubt becomes dangerous when it hardens into this thing that we call skepticism. See, a skeptic prides themselves on seeing through everything in the process of seeing absolutely, positively nothing. When we come into this place, even on Sunday mornings, we should feel free to voice our doubts, but we should also have doubts about our doubts, right? I mean, if I'm living in a moment of doubt, then I absolutely have to be able to doubt that which I think I am doubting. Less certainty about our doubt is often more dangerous than the doubt itself. When I have doubts and I've thought it all the way through and I've reasoned it and I'm just like, this is just how it's got to be, then you have to appreciate that you're in a dangerous spot. You've driven a ground where you might not want to be. There's a difference between saying I'm struggling and saying I've concluded that this is true. That's kind of hard. You see, one invites help. The other invites harm. When I come into this idea that I'm struggling, then I'm asking for people to help me. But when I've concluded that struggle is just God being God, then you have to appreciate it invites harm. As we continue to talk with Asaph and he begins to show us more, we drop down to verse 16 and he gives us another thing that we have to think through our doubt, but no, there's limits. When I tried to understand all of this, it troubled me deeply. Asaph doesn't shut off his brain. Okay, as you read through this psalm, he reasons, he ponders, he thinks very deeply about what's going on in his life. And this is important because God gave us minds and he expects us to use them. Many of the questions we ask today have already been asked and answered by other believers who came long before us. This is why in Hebrews chapter 12, we're told that we sit amongst a great cloud of witnesses, people that can tell us some of our answers if we take time to read and think. But you need to understand, even when you're reading and thinking, your brain has limits. You're not all-knowing. You're not all-wise. And as you begin to think about all of this, thinking alone is not going to resolve your issue. If all you ever do is get trapped in your own brain, then what you're going to do is you're going to end up just talking to yourself and talking yourself into places. Philosopher Blaise Pascal thought about it this way. His famous words, excluding reason, he warned of two extremes, excluding reason and admitting nothing but reason. Folks, if there's a reasonable answer, then we should accept it. Even if it challenges my faith, if somebody gives you a reasonable answer, you should accept it. But we also need to recognize that reason will not always carry us all the way. Sometimes I can think it all the way through, and I still come up short. I still don't get my answer. Paul captures this perfectly in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 8 and 9. We are hard-pressed on every side, but we are not crushed. Perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not abandoned. Struck down, but not destroyed. See, the issue that we've got here isn't a lack of intelligence. Paul is telling us a lot of times what we're struggling with is just a lack of perspective. Just, I'm looking around and I'm not seeing the entire picture. So we need to refocus ourselves. We need to begin to look at it, and we need to begin to pursue God again. And as we get to Psalm 73, verse 17, here we go. Asaph begins to follow his place. I entered the sanctuary of God. Then I understood their final destiny. Who's there? The wicked. Asaph began to look around the world, and he began to look at these people. And simply put, he is seeking God, and he is now arriving in some safe space where he can now begin to think a little bit clearly. But nothing's going to really change. The wicked are still going to prosper. Life is still going to be hard, but if you begin to change your perspective to seek God's safe space, then you know what? You get to reframe your question. You begin to look at things. It took the focus off of ourselves, off of others, off of circumstances, and put it back on where it belongs. God, can you help me? See, Life spokes connect to a hub. Everything finds a place when God is in the center of it. You ever tried to use a wheel when the hub is broken? I ride bikes. You know what you get? Flat tires. Yep. It doesn't go. They don't roll. You've got to have that central hub. And as he does begin to put this back in perspective, moves God to the middle, begins to connect all the rest of life to God, he begins to think clearly once again. And as we arrive in Psalm 73, verses 18 through 25, well, it showed him the end of the wicked. Their success is temporary. Their lives ultimately collapse just like mine. Maybe even a little harder. He tells us, like a dream when one awakes. And as he continues to look, I find that I am doing something that Asaph does always. You know what? I am comparing my very best day with I'm comparing my very worst day with their very best day. See, we forget these moments here. We forget that God pursues, that we need to pursue God. We forget verses 21 through 22. When my heart was grieved and my spirit embittered, I was senseless and ignorant. I was a brute beast before you. Those are some harsh words. He said that when he began to really look at his doubts, he was grieved. He was bitter. He felt like he was ignorant. I like the idea of brute beast because brute force method, right? All else fails, get a bigger hammer. Ask a little louder. Shout a little harder. And when he finally came to a huge conclusion, this envy that he was feeling toward the wicked, he finds out envy always poisons the one who carries it. That's hard. When I envy others, it doesn't hurt them. It hurts me. And as he begins to deal with this idea, his doubt begins to get an answer. He gets it in verses 26 through 28. This is what it says. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. Those who are far from you will perish. You destroy all who are unfaithful to you. But as for me, it is good for me to be near God. I have made the sovereign Lord my refuge. I will tell of all your deeds. In the end, he comes to the conclusion, our minds will fail us. Our bodies will fail us. I felt it going around the park yesterday. I don't do that as well as I used to do it anymore. Of course, I'm not in my 30s or 40s anymore. I've somehow managed to make it into my 50s. I'm getting old. But God doesn't. I know y'all laughing. You ain't heard old yet, right? I know you're thinking this. You have to appreciate it. But God's goodness is not found in getting what we want apart from him. Asaph concludes that it's found in being near him. That's the answer to my doubt. That's where I begin to have faith. It's the idea that God holds us even when we're difficult. God doesn't kick me out of the house just because I have questions and I'm having one of those days. It's a good thing because I would be living out in that park because I would have no house. I struggle mightily with so many things in my life. God guides us when we don't know the way. I don't have to have all the answers, although I still want them. Okay, that has not changed about me. I want all the answers. At least I think I do. God receives us, not just at the end, but forever. You do realize this life is temporary, all of it. Okay, the heat wave is going to pass, and in a few months we're going to be complaining that it's too cold, right? Then the snow is going to fall, and we're going to be wishing for the hot days of summer because we're tired of the snow. There is no satisfying people. We're going to continue to ask these hard questions, and we're going to continue to struggle. And God said, that's okay. I'm going to continue to be here with you, but not just for now, when the temporary is all done. When you don't have this body to deal with anymore. God says, I got it. That's what heaven really is. is eternal nearness to God. It's not streets of gold. It's not pearly gates. It's not crystal sea. Those are all images that we get in the Bible. You understand, heaven really is about the throne room. It is about the fact that I finally get to sit near God, just like Adam and Eve back in the garden. When I take that walk around the park in heaven, it won't be so hot because God's going to be right there with me. We're going to walk step by step. See, at the end of the day, this got to have faith, my doubts, my struggles, all of the things that go through my mind, it seems like 24/7. Our judgments, they're going to be imperfect. I'm going to make the wrong call sometimes. God's judgment is always dependable. Maybe I won't see it today. I'm going to look out the window and somebody's having a better day than me, and I'm going to be like, okay, God, you must not love me anymore. Understand, God loved you enough to came and give his life for you.